This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing, you are not above me. I bet you wish you was me, I know that I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but it's not limited to, my boy, La Manna. What's poppin', Tortoise?
I got confused for a second when you hit me with the Manna.
He
got confused.
He wasn't sure he was going to throw it to.
I was definitely thinking about it.
You noticed that too. Huh?
Grubber, why do we got the crotch shot on every time La Manna
goes
a single?
What do you mean crotch shot?
He just goes straight dick.
This looks great.
Honestly, your outfit
does look
great.
See my new shirt?
Great. What does it say? Real men watch bra. God damn it, Brian.
Listen, what did you say yesterday?
I don't know. That you lean into the bit.
Commit to the bit, baby.
Okay, but we need better bits.
This is a great bit.
It's not a good bit.
It's not a bit either.
I know. That's the problem. It's a fucking lifestyle choice. I'm very concerned with it.
Listen, blame Michelle. She got me into...
Kneecaps are fine.
Ah, yeah.
Shins and dick, it's too much.
I mean, you know, there's some good shows on Bravo.
I have latent homosexual tendencies. So.
I understand. He's a good looking guy. I told you, Curtis has been keeping it tight. Shell is intact.
Curtis looks good.
This shirt does fit nice.
Yeah, well, you know, you earned it, buddy.
Thanks.
Right, was that a schmedium?
Yeah, I think so.
Don't you dare.
What?
Don't you fucking dare talk about anybody wear a schmedium.
First of all.
Sir, you're like twice my size, and you wear what?
It depends on the brand, a medium or a large.
How many?
I'm like a straight 50-50 mix. If it's a cotton shirt, it's a medium. If it's any sort of blend, it's a large.
Also,
you look like somebody
medium.
Dressed up a clothes hanger.
What?
It's not my fault that you're swimming in your clothes.
Who?
You skinny boy.
Yeah, right.
My forearms are bigger than your fucking arms. Let's go.
Beat it.
Let's get it popping.
Did you guys listen to the new Taylor album?
No, shut up.
Awesome.
Broke Spotify. I couldn't be more
happy. I'm done. You can come and set up. I'm out of here.
Shut up.
I'm gone. All right, hurry up and get to the meat and bones. I got to go, guys.
What meat and bones? It's Friday, baby.
Oh, okay, cool. I'll see you guys later.
Where the fuck do you think you're going?
I got a lunch date.
With who?
My aunt and my uncle and their friends.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
They're in town?
Yeah.
And you just now are alerting us to this.
Why didn't you tell him, hey, let's do it at 1:30?
Well,
2 o'clock?
Listen. I got a text.
I have a thing to do. I have to work. Did you tell him that?
I got a text, and they said, meet us here at this time. And I was like, I'll be there. And then I was like, oh, fuck.
All right, fuck us.
Well, the problem was
you're missing the apps, buddy.
I am.
That's all right.
Let's go, Burke. Yeah, yeah, get those guns out.
Fucking schmedium. Mm-hmm.
That shirt is a extra small.
It's a large. It's a large, man. Still, City keeps it tight for me.
Yeah, I need a few more months.
Hitting it today, baby. Let's go.
I need a few more months in the gym before I can fill out a large like that.
Well, you know, Tony will get you there.
Really?
So apparently today's National Poker Day.
Yeah.
Nobody's alerted me to this being a day.
I found this out about 30 minutes ago.
Little tilted. Good marketing opportunity for Sulfur Y. Wasn't a thing that I knew existed. Run It Once was on it, though.
I mean, you know,
they got a 48-hour special. Where are you at, La Manager?
I know.
Come on.
Listen, man. There's probably tomorrow there'll be something else that'll be like World Poker Day. Right? There's like a holiday for everything. Every other day, it's National Pets Day. I don't understand.
I was going to say, it's like National Girlfriend Day all the time.
Right.
As it should be. That's committing to a bit.
Of course, yeah.
That's committing to a bit right there. Yeah, I mean, social media, they do whatever they want to do. It's fine. But yeah, I guess it's National Poker Day. I didn't know anything about it. I still don't know what that actually means.
Is it every April 19th?
I guess. Why not make it April 15th?
Why not make it April 15th?
Let's just put it... Oh, there you go. Of course, 420.
Yeah.
So it's the 6th annual. So somewhere along the lines in 2017, we just decided this was a thing. Mm. Who made this decision exactly? I would like to know. I'd like to get the bottom of this.
I don't get it. Like,
we don't have influencers.
Someone declared it.
Phil.
Actually, I have the answer for you. National Poker Day, initiated in 2019 by DJ Rick McNeely.
DJ Rick.
Aims to celebrate the fun of playing poker. While no major events were scheduled for that day, this is a bad start, efforts have been made to promote it, including discussions with casinos for potential national poker events. Similar holidays. Sorry.
Jesus.
What the fuck was
Holy
that?
Holy shit.
Better out than in. That's what I always say.
Right, what just true. Happened?
Similar holidays exist for other gambling games, such as National Blackjack Day, National Dice Day, highlighting National Dice Day. They got Ashy Larry out in the back alley fucking throwing bones.
Shout out to Ashy Larry.
Man, so what a fucking great skit. So it doesn't seem like a very well-coordinated holiday. Sorry, DJ Rick. Sounds like,
well,
you know,
something went wrong if we didn't know about it until today.
That's right. Because as you know, as well as the rest of us, we are the leading media industry.
We are. And
news.
And, yeah.
There he is.
Well, the thing is, you don't. I think of all the holidays out there.
Why is he stroking it so hard?
Jesus.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't like really know when a holiday. Like, you know, Christmas.
Me personally?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, Christmas, I think 4th of July, just because, you know, the date is in there.
Can't miss. Yeah.
That's about it.
I know a little bit more than you think I know. I'm pretty good with St. Paddy's Day. The drinking holidays actually resonate with me pretty well. Halloween's a fan favorite of mine.
No chance you know, like, Memorial Day or Labor Day or which one's which.
No, I just know they're Mondays.
Yeah.
Come on. Hold on. I feel like...
Well, they're the last Monday of the month and the first Monday of the month,
Memorial Day is definitely
right?
when the party is, so...
Yeah, last Monday of May.
Yeah.
Is May. What?
Memorial.
There you go.
And Labor is the first Monday in September.
As a former bartender, I got to tell you that those days all really suck.
Oh, yeah.
As far as working, like, in the service industry.
Well, I thought they'd be great.
I used to always take vacation in the beginning month of May, because Cinco de Mayo at a Mexican restaurant... is the absolute worst.
You
would make a bunch of money, but for the amount of stress and running around, like, you know how stressed out I get. Imagine me running around the bar trying to get everybody their drinks.
Honestly, like you in the service industry is very confusing to me. I get that. Like, I will say this about Guapo: he very much cares about taking care of everybody.
Right. Everyone to have their drink when they have their drink. Like, yeah. I want to try to give everybody really good service. But when you're just getting absolutely bombarded, it's impossible.
But Guapo can also, like, talk to anybody, carry a conversation, like, you know.
But what he has no interest in is efficiency. So if the place is if the place is filled to the brim and he's got to, like, you know, get out 90% quality in order to fulfill the orders, he just breaks. He's like, no, I can only do it the best of my ability. It has to be 100% or else the malfunction kicks in.
Yeah, this is probably true.
It's not a bad quality. It's just it's tough for you to
not efficient, right?
to handle a large group. And hey, I get it. In the service industry, are these major holidays, are they that much more revenue, or is it like 20% increase?
No, I think it, like, those Cinco de Mayo, like the month of May for the place that I was at, like, really makes or breaks the year, because you've got Mother's Day, you've got Cinco de Mayo, and there's another thing that's happening there. But
so you might like double your earn just over those few days.
Huge.
That's like O'Shea's. They take in like 50% of their
revenue
yearly, not on St. Paddy's Day. Yeah,
playing fucking hepatitis pong.
That place is—it's not what it used to be, because it's nice now. It's, you know, it's like it's part of the Link. When it was like a standalone, its own thing.
I would say that it's just gotten to a standard where it's okay to actually show up there. Before it was a fucking dungeon.
Man,
I'll never understand the fascination with wanting to go have dinner on Valentine's Day when it's almost certain that you're going to get sat right next to another two top. Like, they're cramming in the restaurant. The service isn't going to be great. Like, if you're going to do a Valentine's Day thing, do it a few days after.
I can assure you,
doing it on the
Guapo
day of is all about just being able to put on social media that, well, my man took me out on, you know.
And it has to be the ambiance. I can assure you, no guy on earth wants to go to dinner.
It's awful. It's
going
out
on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's bad. It's dumb. It's bad. I don't know why.
So many people. Guapo just said they cut the tables in half.
Yeah, they just turn and burn.
I've had two relationships during Valentine's, and I went like balls to the wall in both scenarios. And both times we stayed home and I cooked. And the first time, it was one of the most well-received things I've ever done in my entire life. And the second time, I basically got scolded.
Yeah. And that's why she's not around anymore.
Yeah, of course.
Kicked him right back. Yep.
Literally, like, full-blown shouting match on Valentine's Day because it was during COVID, which is even funnier because it wasn't like going out with
narrows it down.
Whatever. It wasn't like as if like going out was like a super option. Yeah. I mean, you know, sparingly you could, but like it wasn't really a big option. So I hired one of Alan Barry's chefs to do a Zoom call and help us prepare dinner.
Oh, so you had like a Hudson table thing going.
And I did like 90% of it, and it just led to the most blowout fight you've ever seen in your life. Like, I don't want to work on Valentine's. It's like, nobody's asking you to fucking...
It's not even about working. It's about doing something together.
Yeah, of course. It's like, what else do you want to do?
Creating something beautiful together.
It was a
like
fucking...
a steak.
It was exactly a steak. It was amazing.
I actually did the Hudson table. Michelle and I went there for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Like... I think it was like our first one. We made steak and it was
yeah. Great. See, like you are forced to cook there. So like clearly it's not going to be packed.
Right.
I mean, they're going to sell out, but like, you know, it's going to be 30 people instead of
right. They only have so many slots. So
yeah. And there isn't going to be a service
issue.
It would
be the same thing as like if you went on any other night.
Right. Right. Yeah, man. I don't get, we need to change the standard. That's what it
is. The standard is the standard.
Right. Is it?
Were you guys homies with Mr. Barry or just kind of a casual thing?
No.
We're very good friends with Alan. He's easily the biggest troll I've ever met in my entire life.
Alan's the best. Listen to this. Hold on. Alan's the fucking best. The only reason why I know Alan is because he calls Berkey at the perfect times. Like these absolute perfect times where we're like just driving somewhere. I don't know.
No, those are just the only times I answer. He always calls me 100% of the time when he's drunk.
Yes.
And it's only to berate me. It's never to say anything nice.
And that's the best part about it. When Berkey picks up the phone, Alan just starts berating him for the full conversation.
No one
fucking hilarious.
No one who has exited poker consumes more poker content than Alan Barry. I mean, he watches fucking everything. He watches the podcast. He watches the streams. He watches Brent every chance that he gets. Like, he is an absolute diehard, and he's also the biggest fucking critic that exists in the space. Like, anytime I even get an underhanded compliment from him, I know that we really nailed it. Like, we hit it out of the park. If Alan was just like, you know, that wasn't that bad.
Okay. He always seems so miserable, dude.
We used to call him Angry Alan.
Yeah, Angry Alan. He's Angry.
He's fucking great.
I like how Guapo asked us if we were friends or just acquaintances before he put up the commercial.
He just always seemed
really
friends, angry.
We're friends. We'll give him some free advertising.
Yeah. He's a special, special human. Big fan of Alan, though.
Yeah.
Good guy.
He's hilarious.
Good guy. While we're at it, let's talk about Champions, our sponsor for the week. Big shout out to Champions Club in Houston. They're bringing the Poker Go Tour to Texas. This is going to start April 24th next week, all the way through May 5th. It's going to open with a $2 million guaranteed main event. $3,300 buy-in. Flights start on April 24th, and there are going to be 8 total flights, 3 of which are turbos. So this should be a pretty big event. They're going to have a very aggressive step satellite series. I believe this is going to be comparable to like the Stairway to Heaven satellites that PokerGo usually runs at the Aria. So you have your opportunity to get in cheap if you're local or you plan on traveling. It's a beautiful property. Everything is a renovated hotel, so you'll be able to stay there on property. Amazing food, as you can see with that steak in the promo. And world-class security. Again, I can't say enough good things about Champions. This is the last time we're going to plug them, so I want to make sure that I do it right. Isaac and the entire ownership group out there, they really went above and beyond to ensure that they create a casino type of standard. So they cut no corners whenever it comes to security, whenever it comes to money in, money out, making sure that their patrons are all protected. Obviously, it's in Texas, so there's no rake. Everything is just paid time, which is another amazing benefit of getting to play out there. You basically get to play pretty cheaply. So be sure, if you haven't already checked out Champions, you head there at some point. The cash games will obviously be off the hook. Place will be packed for the better part of a week. And I can't say enough good things about them. So if you're in the Houston area next week, be sure to stop by. If you guys want to know more, you can click the pinned link in the chat or in the description below. It's also in all the satellites and schedule are if you follow that link.
I got to get there someday just for that steak. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I actually enjoy.
Poker's probably good too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The steak.
The thing I enjoy about going to Texas is it's like an excuse to get a good barbecue.
Yeah.
I don't really eat it outside of when you make it.
Yeah.
I don't want to
get barbecue.
No, of course, where am I going to go? I mean, I'm sure there's a couple places here, but it's going to be fucking wet.
Good places here, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be wet.
It's not all wet.
It's mostly wet.
I mean, if you just get brisket,
but I don't want to just be resigned to brisket the rest of my life, Brian, you know? I want a little pulled pork in my life.
You can get pulled pork without sauce on it.
Can I, though?
They don't put sauce on it until, they put usually, if you want it.
Not if I'm on Spring Mountain. Any of the Korean barbecue places are fucking
wet. Oh, Korean barbecue's very wet.
I mean, that's the most popular barbecue out here.
I mean, yeah, but it's a different kind of barbecue.
Yeah, it's fucking wet.
And delicious.
Good.
And delicious.
Everybody, Berkey likes it dry, okay? Right. Berkey likes it as dry as it gets.
Yo, somebody that.
Rub two sticks together and make a fire. Let's go.
There's a Hawaiian place around here that it's so fucking good.
Really good. Not wet.
No. Wait, where?
Well, right next door.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
they got good beef ribs. It's for sure. So dry, good. Dry beef ribs.
The Kalbi ribs are really good.
Do they have Hawaiian rolls?
Wow. Probably, but
I would say so. Yes,
I would think maybe. So.
But you know what I'm talking
hold
about.
Hold on. I didn't see any, man, and I'm pretty upset about
slider
that.
Rolls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so good.
Those things are so fucking delicious.
It's probably because they're packed with sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
You know, AB just tweeted a hat that's a Trump hat, and it says, "Make Harry Coochie Great Again."
Who said that?
Antonio Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I hate him. Honestly, I love him so much.
I'm coming full circle. I'm back on AD. Yeah.
No, I love him so much, but I hate him. He makes me like, how do you do this stuff? How do you just like write this stuff
He's
on the internet about people?
Such a deranged individual, man. There's just like no getting around it. I mean, honestly, like, have they checked him for CTE? I know the jokes are out there, but like,
he jokes on himself,
right? Ever since that Vontaze Burfitt hit, like, I think he died inside. I think something like, you know, snapped. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
Guy's out of his fucking mind.
He's definitely out of his mind. Speaking of out of his mind, let's talk a little Kessler.
What happened now? What did Kessler do?
Well, he's
back.
He's evoked the ire of the markup police. Mm-hmm. Sean Deeb has had enough. He can't take it any longer. I had to block Kessler because of Deeb.
You blocked Kessler?
I had no choice.
No way.
I had no choice. It's not Kessler's fault. I mean, it's sort of.
How are you going to get all your bets through?
Okay, it's partially Kessler's fault because he's such a stubborn individual who's
this
just
is the
like
beginning
choosing
thin skin Berkey.
No. It's
you could
not
just
that.
Mute.
Yeah.
I could just mute. I get. Yeah, I guess I could have muted.
You're going to allow him back in and mute him?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I wanted to make a statement because here's the thing, like. Because Deeb now stepped into throwing his hat in the ring of calling out Kessler's nonsense, their back and forth are so frequent, and I already can't understand
all you see on your timeline.
Yeah, and I already can't understand what Sean's saying. So it's like it takes me 5 minutes to decode whatever the fuck Deeb is trying to say without punctuation.
How does anyone do? How do you? Why do you not have punctuation? I don't. Does he do it on purpose? Is this like a troll? Is this like a long-standing troll? Where it's like,
no, I don't think so. But I do. I will say that like I don't punctuate questions for some reason whenever I'm texting.
A lot of times I just put the period. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't put the period either. I just like leave it open-ended.
Oh well, if it's the end of the, I'm saying if there's another sentence after it.
Yes, sometimes I will accidentally put the period.
Right.
But generally.
Yeah. Well, if you're like, what are you doing? You don't need to put a question mark at the end of it.
Right, right. But
of course.
I guess when you're writing a paragraph, it's probably pretty important because if it goes, what are you doing? I'm in town for the next 3 days. Are you?
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's like
one long run on sentence.
Yeah, you're kind of asking a lot. But anyway, the origin of this one now, oh man, I have to scroll so far back. There's so much back and forth. The origins of this one were Kessler was selling to something at 1.2, which I don't even think was the reason why this all started. I think here it is. Nadia Magnus tweeted, "What tilts you the most? My top three." And she goes into it. And Kessler quote tweets it and goes, "Scammers and general lowlifes who always find a way to be in action," which was, you know, fine. Nothing wrong with that. But Deeb couldn't help himself, and he goes, Alan, you know you're one of those people in action where people are shocked every single time that you sell at markup. And that's a fair criticism.
Yeah.
Now, from this, they go back and forth in the thread, and Kessler says, I have plenty of money, and then Deeb says, then why do you sell? And then it continues on, where Kessler then offers Deeb to, I guess, effectively crossbook. Like, he basically said that he would buy 100% of himself in the events at face. And now, like, something very important happens that, again, leans back to, I don't know if Alan is the biggest troll to ever exist on Twitter, or if he's just the worst numbers person to ever exist in a gambling space. But it can only be one or the other.
Those are the only two options.
Those are the only two options. There's no in between. Like, you just can't be this. You can't be this incompetent and also intelligent at the same time. So he says, I'll buy 100% of myself at face. And Deeb goes, I'm not going to sell to you at face for an event that you're selling at 20% markup. Now you're just fleecing all of your buyers.
Yeah.
And Kessler then replies with, oh, so you don't want any action? That's what I thought. Which makes me lean on the side of, I imagine this is all a troll. I just don't know, man. I truly don't know.
Like, I'm gonna wager that he's not trolling.
He just sits around like tries to find gotcha moments. Like, I'm just gonna do this. I'm gonna get you.
Yeah. Like, because this is right along the same lines of, like, how much do you owe me for a bet that he never accepted? Right. Right.
Did you pay him yet?
Yes, I paid him in dog coin, dog with hat.
Trade him in whiff.
Trade him in sushi.
So, so the tweet was actually, if you think I'm a dog in the events I'm selling at markup, I'll gladly buy more myself from you at par in any mixed event I choose for the rest of the year. Deal? Fair warning, I actually got first place in 5 of these events in the last 18 months.
He always has to fucking throw those subtle brags in there.
He's the fucking best.
Deeb said, so now you want to double dip the premium, sell to idiots at 1.2, and then buy at 1.0 and make 20% on every dollar.
It's called being an advantage player.
Right.
That's how you do it.
No, he's a white hat hacker.
The crazy thing is, then he replies and he goes, no, I'm buying more at par. I'll buy 100% of Caesar's Mixed, for example. And it's like, well, yes, you're buying more at par, but you also sold at markup. Like, How is this not apparent? And then, you know, the good Samaritans of the world are stepping in saying, like, Alan, if you want more of yourself, just don't sell.
Wait, that's an option?
That's how you get more of yourself at par.
No, I'm just going to buy myself.
He kept saying something along the lines of, I actually don't know what was going on. So then obviously the chainsaw calculator comes in and basically calls bullshit, tells him that, you know, he had a negative ROI in all these mixed events. And Kessler replies, like, that whole mixed chart is predicated on 8 10Ks and the 50K. I was a huge winner in a larger sample of smaller buy-ins, to which the Kessler chainsaw tracker or whatever also replies and goes, you were not. here are the numbers with those events eliminated. You're still minus like 18% ROI, whatever the case may be. So I don't know, man. Like,
did he have a rebuttal to that?
Of course not. Like, he ignores facts.
Yeah.
And the thing is like, I'm not even doing this to hate on Kessler, because I'm kind of doing this in good fun, like tongue in cheek. I don't really think that. Well, I don't know, actually.
Do you ever get a little bit nervous that he's just going to roll up on you one day, like when you're at the series?
No. First of all, I won't be at the series.
He'll fuck your shit up.
Second of all, I would happily have an in-person conversation with him. Like, I don't think that...
I mean, he's the chainsaw, Matt. It might not be a conversation.
I mean, we need to not have him on the podcast. You know? He'll boost our ratings. No. And
maybe one day. Maybe, you know, one single Kessler episode. But the thing is like, I'm going to yell at him. I only have so much patience.
I think it'd be a great episode.
The problem is, here's the thing. Like, I don't think Alan is Trump-like at all. But I think if we had a conversation, he would just turn into Trump, because what he does is he takes these things that are non-facts and he just keeps echoing them
flat earther of the poker industry.
To some degree, but it's really that he never tries to back anything with facts. He just keeps saying a single statement over and over and over and over again. So like he just keeps repeating, like, okay, so Sean, you don't want my action then? You don't want my action. It's like, yes, Alan, I want your action if you're selling it to me at 1.2. Like, of course, if I think you're losing and you're going to pay markup on buying your own action off me, I'll take it. But I'm not going to give it to you at face when you're selling to other people at a premium.
Right.
It just doesn't make any goddamn sense. I just think... You know, he goes for these like weird wins where it's like, I bet the field versus one guy and the field won. Like, aren't I so sharp? It's
just, what are we doing with my money? He got it right. What do you want?
No, that's the thing. It's like,
and you still haven't paid him yet. So honestly, he has some shit to talk.
That's true. That's very true.
Go check your wallet. You got some whiff in there.
Alan asks me all the time, can he come on the pod? And I'm like, yeah, when we have the perfect Alan Kessler topic, right.
There can be a Kessler corner on this pod. I'm just forewarning everybody, it'll result in me yelling. Like,
what the audience wants.
I understand.
We want to see that.
I get that.
I want to see
that. If I get my media pass this summer for the series, I'm definitely going to be interviewing Alan.
Well, of course. Yeah. I'm very patient with most things, but when people just like what I view to be purposefully engage in bad faith discussions and like just break logic right in front of your face, like you're so stupid that you'll fall for it. I don't know how to navigate that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to like, it's why I said, okay, I have to block him now, because I know where this conversation between him and Sean are going. Sean's just going to continually reiterate over and over and over again, you're selling at a premium and you're asking to buy back at a discount. He's going to keep saying that over and over again, because that's logical and it makes sense. And Alan's just going to keep saying, no, I want to buy more of myself and you're too much of a coward to take it.
If you ask me, you guys are just bullying him.
You're right. You're right. This is definitely, this is Kessler abuse. See, this is why I had to block him. This is why I had to do it. I had no choice. I'm sorry, Alan. I want to block you after the World Series. I can't take it.
Wow, after the World Series?
There's no way I'm sweating this for the fucking entire summer, man. I'm not about to watch him sell at 1.3 to some 1,508 mix game. That, like, who knows if he's beating or not.
He's got a 25% ROI in that thing.
Negative, yeah. seems to be that way. Another random call out on Twitter. This one happened a few weeks ago, actually, where D-Negs decided to take a real shot. I don't know what got into Daniel. I don't know who pissed in his cornflakes or...
And this is coming from you, buddy.
What do you mean?
You usually call people out all the time, right?
I don't call talented people out for being not talented. Would seem to be an egregious error.
Okay.
But I will call out people who are like liars, cheaters, and thieves.
Okay.
You know, that seems pretty reasonable. And honestly, like, this is a maybe good-natured call-out, I suppose, but it's definitely a dunk. It's definitely an ego flex and my dick is bigger than yours type of challenge. But Daniel said, PLO series starts today with a fun schedule. Watch some Triton PLO and can only hope they play like this week. Real hand. It's just funny to me that, like, he doesn't name Sam by name or like tag him, or like, you're Daniel Negreanu, you have 600,000 followers, he's gonna fucking see this,
right,
man.
Right.
There's no putting this under the radar. Like, you know, this got 138,000 views. One of those people is gonna tag Sam.
Yeah.
You included a screenshot, my guy. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, he didn't. Okay, no, he didn't. But Sam, he was specific enough. Yeah, he was specific enough. Oh. He said, the real hand. Saw pro early in the six max fold king, queen, jack, nine in the cutoff after two limps. He did make a face like it was an agonizing laydown, and then he puts a laughing emoji. To which Sam replied, I've played less than 5,000 hands of PLO since they canceled Supernova Elite, which would have been 2015-ish. I'm not a great player, and I'm mostly playing tournaments because they're fun and play to my strengths. But for you, I'll make an exception and play heads up. To which... no response from Daniel. And 16 hours ago, Sam just replied with a tumbleweed emote. Oh, wait. D-Nex did reply after.
Oh, shit.
Okay, here. This is so typical. He says, hello, Sam. Would you be so kind as to help me understand the upside for me to spend my afternoons in Vegas with you? Mind you, I already have money, and if I wanted more of it, it wouldn't be difficult for me to get action. I normally charge a charity donation appearance for fee... charity donation appearance fee for my time, which Let's be clear.
Shots
here.
Fired.
That's not a shot
no,
fired.
That's not.
That's fucking ducking the goddamn.
Right, yeah.
That is saying I'm better than you at a game, and the guy's saying, "All right, let's fucking play."
That's
and
shots
then
fired.
You say,
he's
like,
with bullshit.
He's
dissing him. This is basically East Coast, West Coast rap right now.
Yeah, maybe. Sam says, "Hello, Daniel. I've never publicly challenged someone to play heads up, but when you tweet about how I play poorly, and I have several different people tell me you keep talking about my poor play in the PGT studio, I decided to make an exception. Stars is six. I don't know what that means. Sam." Daniel says, "You played one hand poorly and it shocked me. Similar to how you have played on several occasions, tweeted about perceived mistakes I've made in Super High Roller Bowl, etc. You throw stones but don't like it when they hit back. Asking again, what's the upside in spending afternoon?" See, he's moving the goalpost by continually saying, like, what's the upside for like, this is this is what I mean by, like, bad faith engagement. Like, Daniel's right. Sam has definitely taken shots at Daniel's game before. But I guess what's happening here is Sam's willing to basically say, like, I'm better than you at poker. So I'm allowed to have a critical opinion of you. And if you want to have a critical opinion of me, we can just settle it somewhere else.
Yeah, it's like, put your money where your mouth is. It's not, I need to make money, so I'm going to play you. It's,
right.
It's, hey, you said this, now let's go.
Right, and like that's kind of why Doug was able to manage the call out tactics that he did for such a long period of time, because he was an end boss at Heads Up No Limit. So there wasn't really that clap back. Like he could be overly critical about other people's play. He could also be blatantly wrong about that criticism, but there was really nothing anybody could do to challenge it, because if it ends in a heads up for roll situation, he has an edge.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way Sam is presenting this here, where it's like, now Sam wasn't he was on the receiving end of the call out, but you know, I follow Sam's Twitter here and there. He's a very critical eye of what's taking place. But again, like, you have to be mindful of the fact that Daniel's the bigger platform. He's punching down anytime that he takes shots at these fellow pros. And also, nobody believes him to be as good as them. Like, no one thinks Daniel's better than Sam Greenwood at poker in any capacity.
Did you say that Sam at some point has also criticized Daniel's play?
For sure. Sam's very critical of everybody's play, but he can back it up. He's an elite poker player, and he also has a very small platform. So it's like, if he's going to tweet things that are mean about his peers, well, he's going to rub them the wrong way. Like, that's the fallout.
You're talking about Sam now.
Yeah. Like, that's the fallout. He's not going to make friends with these tweets, okay. But he obviously doesn't care, right? So there isn't any other downside to him doing it, because nobody can challenge him on his opinion in the arena, right? Like, if somebody challenges him in the arena, he'll just say, okay. Like, okay. People forget, like, Sam's been an OG whenever it comes to putting his money where the mouth is. When high rollers were first taking off and the German stables were kind of like a big part of the player pools, Sam was like the main guy to get games started. Like, there was a very publicized high roller. I think it was in Monte Carlo, maybe. It was one of the EPT stops, I think. It was either a 25K or a 50K. And basically, Sam started it three-handed with two other players while all the Germans were like kind of on the rail waiting to see who else would reg before they decided if it was plus EV or not. And I remember Dietrich Fast being like one of the most outspoken ones from the German side, saying like, well, it's just in my benefit to game select. I'm shot take, blah, blah, whatever. Like, all very reasonable takes from both sides. But Sam's side was basically, fuck you.
Let's play.
Like, I'll play anybody. Fuck all you cherry pickers. And that's very reasonable from people who are willing to put their money where their mouth is, that are actually in the arena, you know? So it's like, this stuff, it's dramatic. It's funny for us to follow, and, you know, it never really results in anything, but I think it's a little bit of cowardice to kind of say like, oh, I'm going to be very critical of you at a game, and then whenever this person offers you action in return, just be like, I don't need to waste my time with you.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm a very busy man here. Like, what are we talking about? Anybody could see that fold is bad. And like, I don't think Sam's even defending the fold. The fold probably was bad, but like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a one-off. Like, how much EV could be lost by not V-pipping one single hand in one single spot?
I don't see what's wrong with Daniel calling this out. Maybe this is a bad, I don't know if analogy is the right word, but if, like, I like watching UFC, if someone threw a left hook somewhere where I thought you know, this was really stupid, and you leave yourself open for like.
Are you you in this instance, like, or are saying, you Chuck Liddell?
No, this is me.
Yeah, but you're just a this person. A nobody just
go,
fan.
All right, well, let's you know, me and you go into a ring.
No. You're a nobody fan. You don't fight MMA.
Okay.
Daniel's the biggest platform in poker. Okay. This would be the equivalent of Conor McGregor critiquing somebody's left jab. Like, yeah, that's going to result in a fight. Right? Like the biggest platform in the space criticizing
right,
somebody's
right. And then they're like, okay, Conor, fight me. And he's like, right. I don't waste my time
on you.
Right.
Tell me what the upside is for me getting in the ring with you, buddy. Yeah. I'll just make you money when it's all said and done. It's like, well then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, like that's kind of how all of this stuff works. It's the big thing that we keep coming back to. I don't think Daniel understands his platform. I don't think he understands how big his reach is. I don't think he understands how big his voice is in this space.
Yeah.
And I don't think he understands like how much it rubs people in the arena the wrong way, especially when he's so, what's the word I'm looking for? He's such a hypocrite, right? Like he went to the ends of the earth to destroy any relationship him and I had together because I criticized him folding a hand that's making money versus a c-bet. And now in turn, what does he do? He becomes really critical of Sam for folding a hand that should v-pip. And it's like, okay, well, what are we doing here? Like, why is one good for the goose but not for the gander in these particular instances, to the point where like he blazed a trail to fucking defend Jonathan Little over something that wasn't even that critical, and then ultimately come full circle and like create this beef between he and I over a hand that's just like making infinite dollars by check calling one big blind. And now all of a sudden he's going to get pushed into a position to defend himself versus being that same level of, you know, pedantic over a fold that Sam made. And when Sam says, fuck you, play me, it's just like, buddy, I can't be bothered with you or your time or even replying to you in some sort of capacity. It's like, you know, what's the upside? Well, you back up, you actually being able to state these things as true, like being an authority in some sort of capacity on the game and more specifically on criticizing high stakes players that are in the arena with you.
Yeah.
Right. It's a big difference if he calls out, not that this would be better because it would be crushing to someone like this, but if he's watching a 2-5 stream and a random nobody that he doesn't know folds this hand, and he points it out.
Put him on blast.
Well, he shouldn't put them on blast because that person is definitely a Daniel fan. But like, if he did that, at least there's a clear skill gap between Daniel and that person, right? And we can take Daniel as the authoritative voice there. Now, you know, he would have to be very mindful of how he did it so that it didn't hurt that person in some sort of capacity. But like, the point is, the gap in skill between these two players would be so apparent that clearly we would take what Daniel had to say as general theory or strategy, right? When you do it to someone like Greenwood, though, it's like, okay, yeah, Greenwood made a mistake, but he's going to mop you in most of these formats. So it's like, what are we doing?
There's a certain level of immaturity, I think, when it comes to being critical of someone's play, even if it's guys that are in that top tier echelon.
Yeah,
I think being able to say something about the way somebody played a certain hand shouldn't have to be about, well, let's play heads up then. There should be some kind of discourse where they can just...
Well, it's how it's presented. He put 4 laughing emojis and said, I hope other people play like this in the game.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
I'm trying to bat for Daniel.
Here. I understand. There's a way to do it for sure. Okay. But generally, it's going to come off as mean-spirited. Even when Kruk does it during the main event, we all get a kick out of it. But he's definitely punching down. He's criticizing a bunch of regs or, you know, amateurs or people who have an ABI of like $1,500 that are at the final table of the main event. It's like, I can't believe this person isn't stacking off with ace king preflop. It's like, well, it's the biggest spot of their life. You know, they're gonna miss one or two.
Yeah.
You know, we're not very good at this at large as a community, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody else. I just try to pick my battles against people that, you know, there's underlying, like, I'm very critical of airball. Seems okay.
Yeah. I mean, right, God forbid, a recreational player or somebody who's like really loves poker and is all over poker Twitter, makes a deep run in the main event, they would just have to turn their Twitter off.
Because almost people everybody are going to be
extremely critical of the way that they're playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And to be fair, like, with those certain spotlights, you kind of just have to accept it. Like, there's good with the bad. These people are also going to be household names for a few months. They're going to be promoted in a way that they've never, ever seen before. They're going to get more positive attention than they ever have in their entire career they're going to be celebrities for a day. With that, though, comes the criticism.
Yeah, who was the gentleman that came second? He was like a lumberjack or something.
Last year?
No.
Oh, Moon.
Darvin Moon.
I felt like that for Darvin Moon. I felt so bad for him. Because this guy was just a nice guy. He makes his deep run, and Twitter is just blasting.
I don't think Twitter existed in 2009.
Yeah, it did.
In 2009?
It definitely did. It definitely,
really?
Yeah. I just remember social media being very critical of the way that he was playing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Facebook was definitely more prevalent then, but very different time in poker, too. We were right on the back end of that first early boom, and it was all about swag and arrogance, and everybody was in their early 20s. Yeah. We remember the crew, and we remember, like, you know, the David Williams types. Like, they all just had this swagger about them where none of us knew what the fuck we were doing.
No.
But those that were willing to pretend that they were the top experts and also win on top of it, just kind of had bragging rights. And, you know, it is a very machismo game where there's a lot of fucking ego involved, and we forget about all the variants. So when Darvin Moon, like, look, I did a series for PokerGo during the pandemic. I can't remember what we called it, but I went back and rewatched, like, the early WSOP main event final tables. Darvin actually did a lot of things that were kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, he did a lot of things pretty well. It's just, one, Kata ran like Christ. And two, he was clearly the better player. Like, yeah. He had tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hands to Moon's.
I mean, Darvin was just like a lumberjack from West Virginia, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, obviously, Kata was like playing for a living, so.
Yeah. And, like, you know, was a big grinder on Stars.
Much
and
different in skill gap.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, it's not going to go anywhere. We're always going to have some air of arrogance here. And I don't think my point of bringing this up wasn't to try to silence Daniel. Like, go on, man. Call people out. I just think that there should be a better ending to this other than, I can't really be bothered with you being upset about this. I don't really want anything to do with playing against you. That's just boring and not worth my time. Let's just move on, shall we? Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if that was my reply
to Airball.
To Daniel. Whenever he's just like check folding a hand that makes infinite. It's just like, buddy, I don't really have time to show you why this is a bad fold. Let's just move on. You know, and he kind of did the same thing, right? It was a lot of like trying to discredit me. Like, oh, you don't even play tournaments. How could you know anything about anything? It's like, well, because I'm not an idiot. I don't know. I've played poker for 20 years. It's not that hard to deduce. Like, just like it's probably not that difficult for everybody to understand that this isn't a good fold with King, Queen, Jack, Nine.
Yeah.
You know?
You've looked at us all.
Maybe. But the Sims are wrong.
All the Sims are wrong.
All the Sims are wrong. So let's look at a Sim.
All right.
Let's get the muck.
Okay, we got another user submission. This comes from a private game. They are playing 1-2-10. So a big straddle. It's basically a 5-10 game. I mean, they're 2,500 deep. And our user is Datway. I guess he's a Backstreet Boys fan.
Mm.
I want it that way. All right, good.
Tell me why.
Yep. Okay. Back to the in the muck. So mid position opens to 40, comes around to our hero, and he has 10-5 of spades, elects to call, and we go to a flop of 9 of clubs, 6 of spades, 4 of spades. So we get the flush draw. We check, and our villain bets about 3/4 pot, so 60 into 83. We go ahead and call with our flush draw. Turn, queen of clubs, putting 2 clubs out there. We check, our opponent checks back, and the river is the 8 of clubs. And now here's where things get a little dicey.
YOLO.
So we decide, you know what, we have 10 high, we can't win unless we bet. So we bet 175 into 200, and we're met with a raise to 575. You would think this is where the hand ends, but no. We go for it, baby. All in for 2,400. And we get snapped by the nuts. Ace, king of clubs. For a little context, he said that the villain here is very drunk, which makes me think you might want to bluff a little less. But he's very drunk, and he's normally a 2-5 reg. This is a 1-2-10 private game. So they're playing in a private game. Got a 2-5 reg there who's seemingly very drunk, and decided he wanted to go for it here. So what do we think about how this hand played out up into the river?
Spades are bad. Right. You said up into
the river. Up into the river.
I think the hand is like a very, very strong candidate to check raise flop. Mm-hmm. I can't think of many better. Specifically, like, it's a weird, unique scenario. We're not going to have hands like this very often. But having both the 10 and the 5, you like pretty much wrap the board. So there aren't really a lot of turn cards that don't improve us in some capacity. Like even the queen improves us in a way where we have a hand that can represent Jack 10 down the line. I guess like we really only have Jack 10.
Kind of what he did on the river.
Yeah. Backdoor clubs,
I guess.
Backdoor clubs when we have spades, yeah. I think is probably pretty bad. It would be better if we had checked. Would it be better? No, because the bet calls are still going to come from like front door, back doors. Backdoor clubs are just like pretty bad for us, I think, in general, outside of like having clubs that block.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the first mistake in this hand defending the 10-5 of spades? I feel like this is one we can let go.
No, suited hands.
Really? 10-5?
In a straddle, I think. I think you got a call there.
All right.
You can make two different. You can make all the straights, man. You got 10-5.
That is true. You can rep all the straights too.
Just a little context. He said, background on villain. He is in his early 20s, solid 2-5 reg. I think he plays for a living, but not sure. He leans more aggro than other winning 2-5 regs. And was played at 3 a.m. in the morning. And villain was super drunk, slurring words, high V pip, and in the mix.
Well, nobody's going to be playing well at 3 a.m., especially drunk. But, yeah. All right. So, my line of attack here would be to check raise. Queen of clubs is a really dicey turn. It's really fucking tricky for us.
Are you taking a different approach knowing the context that he gave with it's late and the seemingly
nope.
he's drunk and,
nope.
and playing line hands? Okay.
Don't think it matters. We just have a really good check raise candidate. I think I would check raise and then probably he bet very large, so I would probably check raise somewhere in the neighborhood of like 2.5x. And then on the turn queen of clubs, I think we could either check or potentially go for like that middle of the road sizing, like 2/3 pot, because the queen does change the texture. It's a little weird. Basically, I think like on that particular turn card, we're probably going to play a two sizing strategy where we're going to have like big bets and smaller bets.
Yeah.
And I think our hand, if we have a smaller bet size, would qualify. Zoom up and running. I mean, if we go through the check call node, then turn went check check, yeah?
Yes.
Turn went check check, correct.
Yeah, I think we just have a pretty clear give up on the end. Our hand just doesn't really serve us well. I don't hate the bluff. It's just having spades is so bad. So much of his backdoor, or so much of his checkbacks is going to be like relative showdown value backdoor clubs and then like some busted spades, but like a lot of the busted spades will be like pair plus, so it'll be like 9-7 of spades, 9-8 of spades, maybe a weak queen, so like queen 8 of spades, maybe queen 10 of spades. This is going to be a lot of his checkbacks, and for 2/3 pot, like we get looked up by a pair here really, 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 really high frequency.
Yeah.
You're basically trying to make a 6 indifferent.
I'm a little surprised that villain doesn't fire the turn when he has.
I don't know what the villain has. The nuts. I didn't know what he had.
You said he had the nut flush, right, Ryan?
He had ace king of clubs.
Like, you would think that's sort of a mandatory
bet
on the turn?
No, definitely.
No, you don't want to get blown off your equity here. Like, if he comes in with a check raise.
Are you ever folding when you bet?
No, but
you don't want to.
You don't want to bet call. You only have one to come, and like
kind of like the situation from yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. It's like one of those scenarios where if it goes check check and you river a king, you're good at a really high frequency. If it goes bet raise call and you river a king, you're like probably not good very often. You don't really want to just allow out of position to start pumping in a ton of money with two pair plus when you're drawing to the nuts, and more importantly, like.
It's going to be interesting. I want to see what the machine says with Ace King of Clubs from Villain's standpoint.
He said in his assumption that he has very few flush draws because A, pool tends to C bet backdoor flush draws less than solver, and B, when a reg on the aggro side.
C bet less than solver? I mean, I think two barrel less than solver.
I think that's what maybe what he meant.
No. I think he meant C bet.
Oh, he did mean C bet, yeah. And they said. When a reg on the aggro side who's active currently C bets a backdoor flush draw, I expect them to barrel turn at a high frequency.
That would be my mindset as well.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a look at this. I have to change the SPR real quick.
Mm-hmm. He also said he raises two pair plus some percentage on the river. If he were to raise a set, two pair straight, I think raise 80% on river could...
What's the flop SPR? 10? The
flop SPR is, let's see, there's 120 in there. There's like 20. Or more. 30.
Well, they're 2K effective, right?
2,500.
No. Seat 7. 25.
Yeah, 2,500. Yeah, so it's 30.
Okay, so...
Yeah, so they're pretty deep. Yeah, so he said he raises two pair plus, or I'm sorry, he thinks that an 8% raise on the river could be a reasonable size in Solverland. This spot is much more polarized than humans would expect. Even 8-8 is pure calling in position on river. He only ever calls flushes. His quick raise weights him towards bluffs.
Quick shout out to Lee Jones. Thank you for the $10 dono. Didn't get a chance to live congratulate y'all on number 500, but well done. I'm grateful for all of you and love that this pod exists. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
I disagree a bit with his assessment. What he's saying could be more true on different textures. I think that this is largely untrue on such a connected dynamic texture. Like, you can't really under C-bet backdoors on a texture like this because you don't bet that often. Like, I would guess villain size is too large on flop, number one. And number two, for the size that he chose, I bet he probably only C bets half the time at most, maybe slightly less. I would assume we're going to be somewhere in the 40% sizing, but honestly, this is one of those textures where like you very easily could be using two sizes.
I was gonna say this seems like a catch-all bigger size.
You can go basically like these boards tend to play in a way where you either simplify to 40% pot as your single size, or you play like 3E and 40.
3E. Well, you can't.
You can't at this deep. But so like you'll probably be at like 2/3.
Yeah, yeah.
So which was the size that I believe he chose?
75%.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, whatever. If you pick 67, 75, it's not really going to make a difference.
Right.
So yeah, like the size is large. And I would imagine at that sizing frequency, it's probably pretty low. Mm-hmm. Maybe like 15-20% of his hands bet. And so like of those bets, not a lot of them are going to be backdoors. And most of them are going to be very obvious. It's going to be like 7-8 of clubs, 6-5 of clubs.
Yeah.
You know, and then some of these types of like over plus. So like ace king of clubs, I don't
higher think, equity backdoor flush draws.
Yeah, but like I don't think ace king of clubs fits in there. Because when you start to go that large, you start to lose the hands that you're getting value from. So like you want ace jack with a spade to call. And it probably does with the ace of spades, but it may not now with the jack of spades for that size. But for B40, it always calls.
Yeah.
So Matt, like would it be, I'm sorry, go ahead, B.
Oh, I was just gonna say, would it be like like slightly higher equity backdoor flush draws that don't have the showdown value?
Yes, and then also like maybe a hand like ace 5 of clubs, right? Like that's a nice one because you block the 6-5 of clubs, the 4-5 of clubs, you have the backdoor straight draws. Like there's a lot going for it. With the overcards, you'd prefer to have, like, I think king, queen of clubs or jack, 10 of clubs. Hands that can run out favorably but aren't necessary to the nuts.
My question was going to be, and if he can't do this, it's obviously okay. I wanted to see what he's supposed to be defending with, because I still feel like 10-5 of spades seems awfully wide.
No, I can show you. You're going to call all suited hands for what it's worth.
So 10 deuce of spades is just getting in there.
I would assume at a reasonable frequency. Oh, wait.
Oh, I mean, with no ante, there's some suited hands you probably fold, the worst ones, but 10-5 is definitely not one of the worst.
So let's see. Straddle is defending. Let's see. Yeah, pure call.
Oh, wow.
All the 100. Way down to 10-3.
Yep.
I don't know why it chooses to fold 9-4, but call 9-3. But anyway, like, yeah, you're defending pretty much all suited hands, maybe 9-4 3 bets at some frequency. Who knows? But it's mostly like the 2x.
So in other words, if you're range, suited, you're in there.
You have to be. You're getting laid a big price with the straddle.
Okay.
You have to remember there's 1.5 big blinds. I mean, to be fair, this is going to be a little bit skewed because the straddle is actually 5 big blinds.
Okay, that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which changes things a bit, but even still, you know, it's effectively the same as one small blind being out there.
Right.
And if we looked at a normal... So I can make this...
Who's just 5-10?
Yeah, I could just make this like a 2-blind game right. instead. So let's go classic. 9 max, 200.
I don't straddle that often, but I'm definitely not defending as wide as I should be when I do straddle.
Where did this open? Low jack?
Yeah.
So yeah, we just go low jack.
He said mid position, so I just put low jack in.
Call. Let's see, from this range, yeah, now you're more right, Guapo. Like, you're defending much tighter. But again, this is going to be like a rake sim, so I guess like the finality of it all. Let's take a look at an MTT sim. Now, this will include ante, so it'll be a little bit wider. But I think in these types of environments, especially when you're against a drunk person, probably reasonable to go a little bit wider. God, Pip shit herself. Oh, God, you can get it. Huh? Yeah. We're semi. Welcome.
Yeah, do you want to join the pod?
Nick Howard, here, in the flesh. Okay, so yeah, like, this would be... Yeah, this is like a standard big blind defense with no rake and an ante, which isn't going to be too far away, especially playing against a drunk guy. And now it's like all suited hands.
Wow, okay.
You're just getting way too good of a price. Like, 10-5 is a good hand. Or reasonable.
Nick, can you just lean back a little bit?
Pop right into my shot.
Yeah.
We're live?
Yeah, we're live.
Okay, so out of position, no leads, obviously. No shock there. In position, two sizing strat, as we kind of mentioned. It's actually going to be quarter and two-thirds. And this is just because of the width of the straddle's defend. If we tighten that, then it will change a little bit. It is mostly choosing the size that Hero went with, so we can just eliminate the quarter. It's not really necessary, and see what happens whenever he's betting two-thirds. I imagine it's still going to stay around this 50% betting frequency, maybe slightly above, might get up to like 53. Yeah. So yeah, like 53%, if we were to filter this for just clubs, I mean, I guess our OP is pretty correct. In the sense that clubs are really fucking aggressive in the sim land. So you can see ace king of clubs bets more than it checks. As I kind of mentioned, like these two overs and a backdoor straight draw, these are pure bets. So like king queen, queen jack, jack 10, queen 10, these are all pure bets. Then you're going to see like ace king, king jack, king 10 kind of mirror one another. And then you start doing a lot of checking with like the ace queen, ace jack, ace 10s. My assumption is that you like just stop getting value for these hands. There isn't really much worse that can call.
Right.
Same with like ace 8, ace 7. So like you have a lot of nut flush draws that check back. And then as I kind of indicated, the low ones are going hard. So like the ace 4, which is pair plus, the ace 3, which is a backdoor to the low end, and then the ace 5 mixes. These are no shocking. The ace 6, obviously pair plus. So he's right in the sense that like backdoor flush draws are way more aggressive than pool tendencies probably will likely be. But I think he's wrong in the sense that it's impossible to miss all of the backdoor bets.
Yeah.
There's just too many of them. And so many of them are just like naturally coordinated with the board. The 6-7s, the 8-6, the 6-5s, 4-5 suiteds, like all of these just like naturally touch the board. And even though like 4-5 suited is pretty much a pure check in theory, he's probably just going to bet that one.
Yeah.
So who cares? Like at the end of it all, like he's going to show up with the appropriate amount of flushes. So his size is good, which I'd be a little concerned with the fact that a 2-5 player who's drunk is hitting the right theory sizes yeah. here. A little concerning. When we look at a hand like 10-5 of spades, we can see that in theory it does just pure call. I certainly would have thought that this would have some check raise to it. It looks like he's leaning a lot more on the pair plus type hand, so we can isolate here for just spades, and we can see that the most aggressive ones that are raising are going to be like the 9x pairs, the 8-7 open ender, which is a no-brainer, the 7-5 open ender, obviously no-brainer, again more 9x minex. So then it starts to go bigger with the backdoors. So like the 8x's that want to raise are like the 10x with a direct gut shot, and then the overcards, ace 8, king 8, queen 8. See the same with like ace 7, ace 10, king 10. These are all playing like nearly pure raise. Mm-hmm. So I guess like where I got it wrong with like the 10-5 is it wants to have overcards more than it wants to have backdoor straight draws. And I guess the reason for that is that we have so many natural straight draws already that we don't really need to have backdoors to align with it. I would imagine that like whenever you isolate for clubs instead that do some check raising, yeah, it's gonna be all the low stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So it just, they're polar opposites of one another. When you have the front door equity, you want to have over coverage. When you have the backdoor equity, you want to have straight draw coverage. Seems to make a fair amount of sense here. Okay, so playing call here, very reasonable. Turn card is the queen of clubs. And I would imagine this is probably going to be like a 50-50 check bet situation for imposition. I don't think we're going to play any leads. Yeah, zero leads for us. Mm-hmm. you can see the two sizing strat for imposition is going to be capped at pot, and it basically splits right down the middle between potting and two-thirding. Reason being is that this range isn't very polar yet. There isn't a lot of two-pair plus, and over pairs are very susceptible on a double flush draw board like this. Right. They can't really go for it. So you can see like aces is mixing all three options. Kings is mixing between the two sizings. Same with queens, which is now top set. Effectively, like I think queens is a really good example of like how the betting kind of caps. You don't really want to overbet a hand like this because what could you possibly get called by? All of the strong hands exited out of positions, flop, check raise range. Mm-hmm. So like they're pretty capped at like draws in one pair. And when you start to overbet, like you only get called by the combo draws anyway, which means you lose a street of value on the next street, unless you get very fortunate, like the six of clubs rolls off or something.
Matt,
like
can we take a look at Villain's exact hand, the ace king of clubs?
Yeah. So you can see that it's pure betting.
Okay.
You were right.
Hey, guap.
And I think that's a byproduct of how often it shows up on the flop. So it skews towards betting at a really high frequency on the flop, which means it becomes one of the natural follow throughs where like some of the other hands, like ace five, for example, or ace deuce is a better one, almost never bets.
is there a big EV difference between checking and betting with ace king?
I would imagine, let's see. No, it's almost insignificant. It's 0.2 big blinds, in a pot that is, you know, approaching 30 blinds. So like, you know, less than 1% pot share. Not really substantial difference. But yeah, you can see it just wants to go hard with the backdoor nut flush draw. It's pretty much betting it across the board with the exception of, I don't know that there is an exception, to be honest. Ace four and ace king are the only two that mix. so ace king, oh no, ace king doesn't even mix. So it's literally just ace four. It's the only one that mixes. Mm-hmm. The bottom pair plus nut flush draw. It does a little bit of checking. It ends up mixing like a lot more in the, well, I guess let's just filter for clubs. So like the low one, like 7-6 checks at a really high frequency, 5-4 checks at a really high frequency, king 7. So these are like the gut shot plus type of combo draws. Everything else, you can see clubs are just like a really natural follow through. So he's definitely right in that regard if he expected clubs to bet the turn.
Yeah.
very correct that imposition shouldn't really have a ton of flushes when we land on river. So when we do see the eight of clubs river, that's actually going to reduce some of the clubs that would have checked back. You can see that we do have a lot of bets. So we're betting about half the time, mostly for the two-thirds size that he actually chose in game. When we isolate 10-5, we can see that it's merely used as a block, reason being that it spades are bad.
Spades, so it sounds like he got it right.
Wrong size. He bet two-thirds.
Yeah, he
went big. That's right.
Yeah, go small.
Yeah, spades just aren't going to really function for the large size. You can see that like most of the large sizings are going to contain a club in some sort of capacity.
So see that, Guap? You get to make that small little bet for the bluff.
Yep.
It's Guapo special.
Yeah, you have to have something in there. So when, well, let's lock the 10-5 here. I have some mix of sizings. So let's go 0 and 0. Let's do 75-25. Where is it? 10-5. Okay. So let's give it a little bit of the big bet and see if it's ever a viable response to then jam. What size did he choose the race to?
So 175 to 575. So
yeah, so like 3x.
Yeah, about half.
Okay, so this is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, pure fold.
Pure fold.
And if we isolate for double spade hands, I don't think any of them are going to jam. Yeah, none of them jam.
Yeah.
So spades are just like bad. There's just no getting around that spades are bad, and like very bad, nonetheless.
Yeah. You just want him to have the spades.
You have to, to have him having spades, because the thing is, when you look at what he's choosing to raise with, sorry, let me get the spade isolation out there. So when you isolate his raises, you can see that it's a really fucking tight range. Like, he just does not raise this bet very often, and it's pretty strong hands when he does. So it's flush, 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 set. No, sorry. Bluff. So yeah, sevens are his bluff.
Right.
10-9 is his bluff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you notice that he doesn't use 10-9 of spades, so like that's an argument for our hand, I guess. Jack 10 is value, so straight. Jack 8 is his bluff, and then like King 7's a flush, Ace 4's a flush. Yeah, so it's just like purely built around flushes,
right?
So we just have to have a club when we choose to bluff jam.
Mm-hmm. What does his like? Sets in two pairs to facing that river or that river bet. The villain.
Let's see. So this is okay. Let me get off of the raise ISO. So it looks like they're just gonna play call, right?
Right.
So
I think that's where he thought,
was right.
Yeah,
like pocket eights calls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes sense. Like both a straight and a flush fell. So yeah. Like you need stronger qualifiers to put in a raise. Yeah, even like tens bluff catches. So like hands that we may think he's turning into a bluff, like aces bluff catch, tens bluff catch. Not that aces would ever raise, but like hands that are like pair plus or that block the straight specifically. So like tens is a good example. 10-9 is a good example. Jack 8. These hands mix, and we'll be playing like a fair amount of call. Like you can see tens or bluffs ever so slightly, right? Yeah. Jack 8's more of the natural conducive bluff here, but like Queen Jack, pure call. Like it's never going to turn top pair into a bluff type of thing. So it's just really hard to see if you're the one leading for two-thirds pot where the fuck the bluffs are coming from, because they're non-intuitive and they don't come all that often. And then it's like for us to take a look at what jams then, you can see that it's mostly just going to be flushes for us, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like ace-king off is the bluff, which we probably never have. We would have to flat it pre and then play it this way throughout three streets. So like we almost certainly never have ace-king. Okay, eliminate that bluff. That's a flush. Now we're looking at like 7-5 off, which is a straight So we're actually jamming for value. 10-7 off, again, a straight. We're jamming for value. 6-4 off, two pair, I guess. Given that we're using the four of clubs, this is a
six,
bluff.
6-7 off contain a club?
There's no 6-7 off.
Oh, I thought you said 6-7.
6-4. 6-4, 7-5, 10-7.
Yeah. Oh, 7-5, I mean. Sorry.
7-5 is a straight.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, it's only with a club.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's what I meant. Everything has to contain a club. I don't think right. anything in this range is clubless.
So his assumption, I think, and in theory, obviously, you know, he thought that like he could, Billen could be raising river with like some two pair plus type of hands, sets and stuff like that, that he could not jam and get them to fold. But in theory, that they're not, they're just going to call with those hands.
They're supposed to call. Maybe, like, maybe look, we jam, practice, four, we jam, you know, fours for value.
Right.
Right. We're jamming fours with the four of clubs. I don't think this is a bluff, right. You know, like, we follow through with the jam. Do we get called by worse than pocket fours? Maybe not. 7-6 calls. So yeah. 6-5 calls. So yeah. 5-4 pure call. Like these hands are all pure calling. Ace-4. Sorry. These are flushes.
Yeah.
So okay, fours is a bluff. Fours with a club is a bluff. Blocking ace-4 of clubs is blocking 5-4 of clubs. So yeah, like we're bluff jamming sets. You can't bluff jam a disconnected spade hand. You just get absolutely torched. Like that's how sensitive this is that we're bluff jamming a lot of the hands that we were value betting initially, right? So anything that we were bluffing with, that's a really critical takeaway here. If we're looking for a single principle, every single hand that we chose to initially bluff the river with when facing raise is a pure fold, including like single club hands, right? So ace, queen, well, I guess that's value. Let's see. So our initial bluff, right? If we isolate here for 2/3 pot, ace jack with a club. Okay. Now we go to the node where we're jamming. Ace jack, pure fold.
Right.
So anything that we were bluffing initially is now a pure fold, and we have to look at what the bottom of our value bets were and start turning those into bluffs.
Right.
So that
the range just narrowed too much.
Right. Yeah. So now those bluffs become 6-4 for bottom two with a club because we're gonna block the pair plus flushes that check back the turn. Pocket fours with a club, same idea. We're blocking now the 4x of clubs that would have checked back the turn. So we initiate more folds now whenever we're turning these hands. Those are hard as fuck to find. You can see that they mix call and jam, right? So it's indifferent. They're really only jamming so that we have some bluffs. So if you never bluff here, you're going to do just fine also. Just shove your flushes.
Yeah.
And yeah, like him being drunk, I think the only thing that indicates is that like he's going to call wider.
Right.
So like if he raises a set, he's probably going to call it.
Yeah.
If he raises a straight, he's probably always calling it instead of mixing it. So yeah, sorry. Reject me, daddy. We didn't get this one correct.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate.
That's why we, that's what why we look learn. At.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. We're here to learn. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
Appreciate the submission. If you guys would like to submit your own in the muck, be sure to head to @onlyfriends_pod. The link to our Discord channel is in the pinned tweet. Be sure to follow that. We have an entire forum dedicated to In the Muck Hands, as well as a lot of other great stuff there. If you guys want to get involved in the Chi study group that happens every Saturday or every other Saturday rather, or just be a part of the discourse in general. You know, we're all in there. We're all shooting the shit from time to time, talking a little strat. You know how it goes. Let's get out of here on a couple fun notes. Be sure to like, subscribe, click the bell. Helps us. While we're talking about YouTube, there was a recent short that went viral from... Who was
Wolfgang?
It? Wolfgang. Yeah. Got over 100 million views. Ike Haxton was kind of just like, what the fuck? nothing happens in this hand. Why are 100 million people viewing it? And
fucking algorithm, man.
It's kind of an indication as to how the algorithm has changed a bit. It is featuring these shorts more. It broadens the audience and broadens the scope.
I wonder if you can buy a Tesla with 100 million views.
You cannot. We are here to confirm.
Probably a nice down payment on a Tesla.
We are here to confirm. We have 100 million views where we can.
No, but Poker News did
extrapolate it out.
Poker News did the due diligence and they asked how much money did Wolfgang make off the most viewed poker clip of all time. And in the article, it went on to state that 103 million views was worth roughly $3,000.
Wow.
But, you know, short views aren't the same as long form views.
Right.
You know, you get 100 million views on a long form video, that's going to be worth somewhere around 100K.
Wow.
I would guess.
Wow.
Joey did
then
like.
You can get your Tesla.
Oh, yeah. Joey's Khabib.
I think that did like 20 million, maybe 30.
He probably got a nice little.
I think he got somewhere around 30K.
Wow.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to be fair, it's really hard to come up with 30 million views, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what the Super Bowl gets, like how many views? It gets like hundreds of millions of views.
I think 500 million, if I'm not mistaken.
And they charge, you know, $3 million for a 30-second ad, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, man. Traditional TV, huh?
I said 3 million. I don't know. It might be way, maybe like 8 million.
I wonder if it's gone down. I believe a Super Bowl ad spot used to be like $1 million for 30 seconds.
It's more. It's millions of dollars.
I wonder if it's gone down. The thing, though, is with YouTube, the ads are only 5 seconds, right? And then it becomes a click-through.
It's true.
So, you know.
But there are multiple of them, usually.
Right, but I'm saying, like, if you're paying for a five-second ad spot and you're paying a couple $1,000s.
Yeah.
It extrapolates a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that it's a one-to-one. Also, CPMs matter a lot, like. In the finance space, the CPMs are much higher. Poker CPMs are actually pretty high, to be honest. But I don't know how that works with shorts, because I assume shorts have no advertising in them, and that's why they don't monetize as well.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, pretty interesting. Would love to know more about the economics behind it. I'd like to know like what direction the algorithm's trending, obviously.
I mean, there was a guy with a Steeler jersey in the video, so that's probably why I got 100 million views.
That would make a lot of sense to me.
Right, I would assume.
Definitely a lot of sense.
See, Russell Wilson is throwing out the first pitch.
I don't care about this guy. I don't care about him trying to fake it and pretend like he's a yinzer. Like, look, go out there and win us games, great, but like, he's never going to be accepted as one of us. He's just too cringe, man. He's just too fucking cringe. Everything about him, too cringe. Speaking of cringe or cringe humor, Barry Carter nails it once again.
Oh, God.
By the way,
so
like,
on point.
He's Twitter personality of the year. If they fuck this up, they should just cancel GPI's forever.
He's killing it.
Like, they shouldn't even have. This should be one of those ones where the award's just given away prior to the stream, and instead of having a category. You know how, like, every year there's nominations? No, fuck that. Like, Barry Carter just wins.
Shout out to Zuckerberg on the, what do you call that, a glow up?
He looks
good, man.
He does look good, but he also looks like he just became a part of Backstreet Boys.
Wait. Nah, that's the same person,
good, man. Yeah.
I didn't even realize
that. That's Thug Life. That is Thug Life, Barry Carter. And honestly, this is so good. He has Money on Tice with the clean buttoned up version, and then has Money on Becker is the new hip hop version of Zuckerberg. Gotta love it. Honestly, Zuck, he's out there, man. He fucks.
Yeah,
he
does. He's BJJ. He's lifting now. He's doing jujitsu. He's doing a little striking. Like, yeah.
Testing the Oculus. Testing. Yep. What was the other one that just came out? The what was the virtual reality that just came?
The Apple one.
Yeah. No, he's Apple.
Vision Pro.
Oh yeah. No, the Apple.
Vision Pro.
Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Said it's dust. Said go buy the Facebook version.
Yeah, of course.
The fuck
of course
that
he
is.
Said it's dust. Direct competitor.
I trust them.
Yeah.
I don't really trust him. I don't trust him at all.
I don't trust anybody, man.
How could you? DTA. All right, that's going to do it for us. We're going to get out of here. We'll see you guys fresh next week, Monday, noon Pacific. Maybe Conrad will be joining us. I don't know. He just walked out.
He gone.
This might be it, guys. 5:01.
Hey, we did it.
We ended it. We ended it right here. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys Monday. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Let us know what you think about all things poker. We'll see you guys all then.
Peace.
Enjoy your weekend. Peace.